I imagine those conversations will keep going longer if we let them. Please let me give you where I've got all the answers from. Let me recommend a couple of books that I found really helpful thinking through conscience. So two, let me put that one down. I have also found the Bible helpful. I'm putting it down. But that has been particularly helpful. These two are based on the Bible, for clarity's sake. Conscience, what it is, how to train it, and Loving Those Who Differ is excellent by two guys called Andy Nocelli and J.D. Crowley. I read this 5 years ago. It's stayed with me since, and it's kind of why I thought this series was worth doing. Really recommend that. As part of my prep for the series, Christopher Ash, Pure Joy, Rediscover Your Conscience. I found that really, really useful as well. So if you want to think more about it, feel free to grab one of those from all good book companies that will sell them, Amazon, 10 of those, The Good Book Company, and other places, I'm sure. Those are a couple of books if you'd like to do some more reading. Here's the question I want to answer as we start. Why spend 4 Sunday afternoons thinking about the conscience? If you want my one-line answer, I think it's this. It is probably one of, if not the voice we hear the most often, and it is one of, if not the voice we think the least about. We hear our consciences all the time. We are constantly listening to our consciences. We rarely stop and think about our consciences. Let me give an example of the way that our consciences are kind of at work all the time, and we hardly even notice that that's what it is. So imagine your phone breaks this afternoon, disaster, I know. And then you need to go and buy a new one. You go to the shop, you decide which one you're going to buy. You get home and you're talking to someone later and you're talking about why you made the decision that you made. You might say something like, I just felt like this was the right one to get. Or you might say, I didn't think that was the right one. That felt wrong. Or you're in the shop, and in that moment where you're talking to the salesman and you're trying to work out what to say, you kind of say, well, my head says this is the right thing to do, but part of me feels uncomfortable about it. What is going on in each of those three statements? They are kind of moral statements, and that is actually your conscience at work. It is your conscience working within you to make you aware of something. Our consciences are at work a lot of the time. They are speaking to us a lot of the time. Buying a phone doesn't feel like a very big decision in many ways, and yet, even in those kind of day-to-day things, our consciences are speaking to us. We experience the conscience a lot. The conscience is relevant to our day-to-day experience. And the Bible actually speaks quite a lot about it. There are kind of two big passages that spend quite a lot of time dwelling on conscience. We'll come to those in the kind of fourth week of our series. But the word comes up a lot of times. It comes up about 30 times, depending quite how you count these things, about 30 times across the New Testament. Often it's one of those words that kind of comes up in passing. And so as you preach through or read through or teach through passages of the Bible, you kind of don't have very much time to just stop and think about it because there's loads of other words that come up in passing as well. And you're trying to drive to the main thing. And so it's probably one of those words that we've read in passages, but we've never really paused on. My hope is that this series will help us to pause on those words, that word. And so when we read it in future weeks, as we kind of work through our Bible reading plans or whatever it is we do, as we come across that word in our Bibles, we just have a much fuller understanding of what it means and what it's doing. The way this series is going to shape up is kind of today we're working with a definition. We're going to define what the conscience is. And then we spend the next 3 weeks applying that. So if today feels a little bit dry, firstly, I'm sorry. Secondly, that's kind of intentional because we need to kind of work out what the conscience is. There's no point jumping to applying it in lots of different areas of life until we really understand what this word means. So we're going to work today with a definition of the conscience. That means we're not going to spend loads of time in passages in the Bible because it's quite hard to use passages that use the word conscience to define a conscience. So we're going to work with kind of the big sweep of Scripture. We'll kind of jump into passages at a couple of points. We're going to work towards this definition of conscience. And then in future weeks, we're going to dive into the passages that speak about it. We're going to work through the definition in stages. Here's the first stage. The conscience is a gift. The conscience is a gift. It is something that is given to us. It's not something we created. It is given to us, and it is given to us by God. God, the giver of every good gift, gives us a conscience. Part of what it is to be human is to have the capacity for moral decisions. And part of the way we make moral decisions is a conscience, a God-given thing that helps us to make moral decisions. We have consciences because we are made in the image of God. It is something that God, in his kindness, has given to us to help us, to communicate to us what he would want us to know. Here's how a pastor from a few hundred years ago describes the conscience. The conscience is God's deputy in our hearts. God has assigns to us a conscience, his deputy at work in our hearts to show us right and wrong. We'll see more of that in a minute. It is a gift to us. It is a good gift to us because it protects us. Our conscience is there fundamentally to help us to do right and wrong and to protect us, to help us do right and to protect us from doing wrong. So the conscience works a little bit like an early warning system. We have other parts of our kind of makeup as humans that work as early warning systems that are good for us. So the sense of touch does lots of things. One of the things the sense of touch is really good as is an early warning system. So if you have a child and they touch a hob that's on, what is the sense of touch doing for them at that moment? It is warning them for their goods. Take your hand off now before something a lot worse happens. If you didn't have a sense of touch in that moment, what you would do is just leave your hand there until your nerve ends get shredded and your fingers get charred. The sense of touch is an early warning system to protect. So too, when it comes to moral decisions, the conscience is an early warning system. God has put it within us to help us to not hurt ourselves and hurt others by making bad moral decisions. The conscience is a gift, an early warning system. And it's a gift, and here's the second part, and by far the bigger part of our definition. It is a gift which makes you aware of what you believe is right and wrong. That's a bit wordy. We're going to break that down and work it through in stages. It is a gift which makes you aware. One of the strange things about your conscience when you stop to think about it is your conscience talks to you like it's an independent third party. You ever notice that? But that is really weird. There is a part of you that speaks to you as if it's not also part of you. So you imagine you, I don't know, win the lottery or you trip over a check for £1 million addressed to you or something like that. You just suddenly come into loads of money and you think, great, here's the wish list of all the things I've always wanted. I can now go and spend to my heart's desire and get all the things I've always wanted. What will happen in your head at that moment is a voice will come in, a little voice in your head that will say, you need to stop thinking about you. That is, you are telling you to stop thinking about you. That's really strange, right? If you stop and pause on your conscience, it is a really strange thing that we have something within us that sounds like it's not part of us, that talks like it's not part of us, but very much is part of us. And that's because the function that God has given it is to raise awareness within us. So it is part of us. We each have our own distinct conscience, but it is also there as an awareness raiser. It's why you hear those stories occasionally of the criminal who got away with it and then 10 years later goes to the police station and hands himself in. In that moment, what is happening is that person is making themselves aware that they should do something that is actually kind of harmful to them. The criminal going to prison isn't objectively beneficial to the criminal. But in that moment, their conscience is making them aware that it is the right thing to do, so they need to do it anyway. This independent voice that speaks into our situations, the conscience is an awareness raiser. And it is an awareness raiser, particularly about right and wrong. We'll come back to the bit in the middle of that sentence. It is an awareness raiser about right and wrong. The conscience is not so much worried about kind of beauty, though that matters to God. It's not so much worried about kind of prudence or practicalities, though those matter to God. It cares about morality, right and wrong. The most famous conscience in Western literature, if not in all literature, is a talking cricket. As you look at the story of Pinocchio, what role is Jiminy Cricket playing? He is Pinocchio's conscience. And what does he speak about? Right and wrong. Pinocchio, it is wrong to disobey your parents. Bad things will happen to you. You'll become more and more like a donkey if you disobey your parents. Disobeying your parents is a bad idea. You see what categories the cricket works within, right and wrong. In many ways, the whole story of Pinocchio is one of a boy learning to listen to his conscience. And when he does, life goes an awful lot better for him. The conscience is interested in right and wrong. It's a bit like the kind of guide that tells us which is the right path and which is the wrong path. It's a bit like the compass that's supposed to point true north and tell us that is the way to go and do not go east or west or south. One author describes it as a kind of umpire that God has put in our hearts. The conscience is interested in right and wrong. But because the conscience is interested in right and wrong, it is very, very black and white. The conscience doesn't really do grey. So one author, one of those books, talks about an on-off switch versus a dimmer switch. The conscience is very much an on-off switch. This is right, this is wrong, do this, don't do this. The conscience doesn't come along to you and say, it's complicated, there's this argument and there's this argument. It just says, do this, and if you don't, you're an awful human being. Life is quite complicated sometimes, and there is nuance, and we need to grapple with the nuance. Our consciences aren't there to give us nuance. They are there to say, go this way, it's nice and simple, just do what I say. And it works in telling us right and wrong, both forwards and backwards. So it works forwards, telling us the right way and the wrong way so that we choose the right way. It also then works backwards so that if we have chosen the right way, we kind of get a sense of commendation from our conscience. And on those times when we choose the wrong way, we feel condemned by our conscience. Next week, we're basically spending our whole time thinking about the backwards looking effect of the conscience. What do I do when my conscience commends me? What do I do when my conscience condemns me, particularly when it condemns me? And how does the work of Jesus help me with that? That's where we're going next week. The conscience is an awareness-raising thing that God has given that talks about right and wrong. But here's the bit in the middle. It makes you aware of what you believe is right and wrong. This is where it starts to get complicated because we are complicated. You see, humanity was made very good. Adam and Eve's consciences, were always pointed due north. It was nice and simple for them until they fell. But because we are both created in God's image and still bear that image, but also we are fallen, that affects our consciences too. It's not that our conscience is somehow unaffected by the fall and is therefore infallible and always tells us what is right. Sometimes our consciences tell us something is good when it is not good. Sometimes they tell us something is bad when it's not bad. They now sometimes point away from due north. You see this in a kind of proverb in the middle of the book. Middle of the book of Proverbs, we're told there is a way that appears to be right, using that right-wrong language. That is, the conscience says to someone, this is the right way, but in the end it leads to death. Because our consciences are fallen, just like every part of us, that means that our consciences are no longer infallible. We can't just assume that because our conscience says it, it is absolutely true. That's where it starts to get complicated. It also starts to get complicated because our conscience makes things right and wrong when actually that's not really the correct category. So there are a whole load of things that each of us will have within our individual consciences that are way more to do with kind of family upbringing and personality and culture than they are to do with what God says is right. We take things that are not inherently moral and we make them kind of fundamental moral things. Let me give you an example. Here's a question for each of you. We're not going to get you to vote, but that would be really fun. Is it okay to leave your shoes on when you go into someone's house? You've come in from the outside. Is it okay to leave your shoes on? Some of you will say no, never. Some of you will say yes, always. Who really cares? It's only mud. Some of you will say yes, it's fine if it's your own house, but not if it's someone else's house. Some of you might say it's fine if it's someone else's house. In fact, it's good to leave them on in someone else's house because kind of baring your feet or your socks to others might be offensive to their culture. But in your own house, you should take your shoes off because that's kind of how you relax. Or it might be you say it's okay as long as there's hard floors, but the minute there's a carpet involved, then it's not okay anymore. And you will believe, whichever of those is your position, some of you at least, will believe that really strongly. Like, that will become quite a moral thing for you. That isn't just a kind of preference thing. Our consciences make things to be kind of clear moral categories with definitive right and wrong, where God doesn't speak anything about what you do with your shoes when you go in someone else's house. I mean, sure, he speaks about being hospitable and things like that, and there are implications, possibly. But that is not a fundamentally kind of key moral thing that God dictates. And yet, all of us will have answers to that question, and probably answers that are shaped by our culture, our personality, and our upbringing. It is complicated. If I'm basically aiming at two things today, one, it's helping you see what the conscience is, and secondly, helping you to see that it's complicated. Maybe that will convince you to come back for the next 3 weeks where we'll start to understand it and dig into it and apply it a bit more. So what I'm going to do now is going to introduce you to a conscience. This is a conscience. For the sake of this series, all consciences are triangles because it makes the graphics work a little bit neater, and that's what the book did. And so we're going to work with a conscience. This is Rob's conscience. You can see those random kind of letters dotted through Rob's conscience. Those are rules that Rob has that he passionately believes there is a right and there is a wrong. That's Rob's conscience. He's got a fair number of rules. This is where it starts to get complicated. There's Brenda's conscience. So as you start to look at those consciences, you notice a couple of things. Okay, so there's some rules they have in common. Both Rob and Brenda think A and C matter. Brenda thinks H and I are important. Rob doesn't care about those. Rob then has quite a lot of rules that Brenda doesn't care about, B, D, E, F, and G. That is just two people. And there's already disagreement, probably quite strong disagreement. Now, let's bring God into the picture. Imagine then that is God's will, and you start to overlay that, and it's now starting to get really complicated. Okay, so let's just run through each of the letters. So A. A matters to God, it matters to Rob, and it matters to Brenda. Great. They're all aligned. B matters to Rob, it matters to God, it doesn't matter to Brenda. Brenda needs to think about that. C, that matters to Rob and Brenda. God, that's not within his will. He's not so fussed about that one. So Rob and Brenda need to think that through. There's D, E, F, and G, all those extra rules that Rob kind of has at the corner of his conscience. Brenda's not bothered about those, neither is God, and so Rob needs to hold much more loosely to those rules because God doesn't speak about them. You've then got where we're up to. H matters to Brenda, doesn't matter to Rob. So even though Rob's got more rules than Brenda, Brenda's got some rules that Rob doesn't have. That doesn't matter to God either. So Brenda needs to hold looser to that one. You've got rule I. That matters to God and Brenda, but not to Rob. Rob needs to rethink that. And then you've got rule J. That hasn't even figured on Rob's or Brenda's mind, but God really cares about it. Do you see how complicated it's starting to get already? What do you do with that? What do you do with those rules? And here's now a thing that's going to make it even more complicated, and you need to go 3D to make this work, and we're not doing that. The things that are outside of God's triangle fall into one of two categories. There are things that are outside of God's kind of definitive will that are sin, so things that God says, thou shalt not. So maybe, for example, let's pick on Brenda. Let's say rule H is Brenda saying something is good that God says is actively bad. Brenda needs to repent of that. Let's say rule G in Rob's conscience is the shoes thing in the house. As Rob grows in godliness, as he grows to align his conscience more to God's will, he doesn't have to change his mind on rule G. He has to hold looser to it because he understands that it's not definitively said by God, thou shalt, or thou shalt not. He doesn't have to change his mind on that. He can still hold that as a preference. He just needs to not hold it as a moral imperative. Conscience is complicated because all of us have different consciences. Imagine overlaying every church member onto that. Imagine how messy that's going to get. We're going to see in future weeks how we deal with that in the life of the church. If your head's starting to hurt, that's okay. let's come back to our definition. That's our safe ground for today. That's a solid thing we're standing on. Here's our definition. The conscience is a gift which makes you aware of what you believe is right and wrong and shapes how you live. That's the final thing. It shapes how you live. That is, our consciences are not a theoretical thing. They're not just this kind of interesting thing that posits, suggests to us right and wrong. They also affect our day-to-day decisions. Your conscience fundamentally shapes most of the decisions that you make. And so, it's important that we listen to our consciences. I said there wasn't going to be loads of application today. Here is the one big application from today, other than grasp that that is what the conscience is. The one big application is follow your conscience. Your conscience shapes how you live. Do not ignore what your conscience says. Do not ignore what it says. The Apostle Paul, he said this. This was his aim. This was his ambition. This was his mission. This was his mindset. I strive always to keep my conscience clear before God and man. Paul's aim was to always keep his conscience clear, to never go against his conscience. That's what Paul wanted. He wanted to make sure that on every time his conscience was clear. Follow your conscience. Little asterisk. We live in a culture that is hyper-individualistic, where the phrase follow your conscience sounds an awful lot like follow your heart, do whatever you want. That is not what I'm saying. Follow your conscience. Listen to what your conscience is saying is right and wrong. When you feel a pang of guilt, listen to that. Because otherwise you end up in a situation like they ended up in at the end of the book of Judges, where everyone does what they think is right in their own eyes. That's not what we're saying. But we are saying, follow your conscience. Listen to your conscience. It is God-given. Do not go against it. Even though our consciences are not perfect, and we'll come back to that in a second, it is always a bad idea to go against your conscience. It is always a bad idea to go against your conscience if you think your conscience isn't directly disobeying what God has to say. It is always a bad idea. Let me explain why. A couple of quotes are going to come up. This will help us. Two different authors saying similar things. To go against your conscience when you think it is warning you correctly is always a sin in God's eyes, because your intention is to sin. That is, if you understand the conscience is given to you by God to communicate right and wrong, and it is communicating what is right and communicating what is wrong, if you think it's doing that correctly and you go against it, even if it is actually not telling you correct information, by going against it, you are intending to go against what God has to say. Does that make sense? Let me try again. Let's use a specific example to try and help us. So let's imagine that you are really convinced in your conscience. Let's go back to the shoes, because it's nice and trivial and no one's going to get too offended if I talk about muddy shoes. Let's imagine that you are convinced that one of the implications of be hospitable is to always let people traipse their muddy shoes through your house. You are convinced that God says, thou shalt let people keep their shoes on in your house. And then you're confronted with the muddiest pair of shoes you've ever seen. And your conscience is saying, no, you have to let them keep it on. And the kind of cleanliness part of your mind is saying, no, they have to take them off. If you are convinced that God says you have to let them keep their shoes on, and you say to them, please take your shoes off, they're just so muddy, you have gone against what you think God is saying. The fact that God actually doesn't categorically tell you what to do in that situation is kind of irrelevant at that point, because you think he does, and you've chosen to disobey him. Your intention in that moment is to sin. Whether it is actually objectively sinful or not, for you, it is sin. Another quote saying a similar thing, if a second quote will help. If you forsake your conscience and go against it, you reject the authority of God. The conscience is functioning as his deputy in doing that which you think he forbids you. If you go against your conscience, you are going against what you think God is saying. It is sin. Don't go against your conscience. Follow what your conscience is saying. That might leave you with a bunch of questions. Here's three questions it might leave you with. And the triangles are going to help us. Oh, Luther first. Before we go there, let's go to Luther. Here's what Martin Luther had to say. It is neither safe nor right to do anything against your conscience. It is not safe. Your conscience is an early warning system. It is not right. Your conscience is a moral warning from God. It is not safe or right to do anything against your conscience. Don't go against your conscience. That might leave you with some questions. Now we're going to go back to our favorite triangles. So, question number one, what happens when I do something outside of my conscience? So a K is going to appear at the bottom of our screen. What happens if I do K? That's outside of my conscience. I've broken my conscience. Now I feel incredibly guilty. What do I do with that guilt? Next week, we're going to think about that. Second question I might leave you with. What about the fact that my conscience wasn't aligned with God's conscience, God's will? How do I get mine to look a bit more like that? How do Rob and Brenda align their consciences with God's? In our third week, that's what we're going to be answering. How do we calibrate our consciences so they will be more like God's will? And then here's the fourth question. As Rob and Brenda's consciences move, so if you are very eagle-eyed, you'll notice those are slightly closer to God's will than they originally were. As Rob and Brenda's consciences move up towards God's will, as they align, because in this life they will never align perfectly, as they come into disagreement as fellow members of the same church, as fellow Christians working alongside one another, what do they do with their disagreements? What do they do with Rule H? For Brenda, that really matters. For Rob, it doesn't. It's not even within God's will, but what do they do? Who do they listen to? Whose conscience wins out over who? That's what we'll think about in the fourth week of our series. Closing, let's go back to our definition. Here's what the conscience is. It is a gift which makes you aware of what you believe is right and wrong and shapes how you live. Discussion questions are going to appear. Go back into groups. Those aren't in a strict order. To answer whichever one of them in whichever order you want. We'll do that for 5 minutes or so, and then I'll come back up. Questions than you had 45 minutes ago? That's okay. If you want to write down your questions or text me your questions to make sure they get answered in future weeks, very happy with that. Feel free to send me an email or a WhatsApp message or whatever. I'll try and make sure I'll answer some of those questions as we go through. We're going to turn to pray in our groups before we sing to close. So why not turn in your groups 4 or 5 minutes, pray together in the light of what we've seen, and then we'll turn to sing.